Welcome to Real Medicine, Real Lives. I'm Dr. Yasser Sombel, and together we're showing medical expertise in a human way. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Real Medicine, Real Lives. I'm your host, Dr. Yasser Sombel, and today we're diving into an issue that affects families everywhere, the financial and emotional weight of medical bills. Healthcare should bring healing, but for many, the financial strain becomes its own kind of crisis. Our guest today understands this intersection deeply. Dr. Wendy Labatt, widely known as the Financial Healer, is the CEO of the Financial Cures LLC and creator of the Financial Cures System, helping individuals overcome financial pain, uncertainty, and stress. As a best-selling author, speaker, and entrepreneur, she empowers people to take control of their finances and build a legacy of stability and freedom. Dr. Labatt, welcome to the show. Let's begin by exploring the harsh reality so many viewers, when they face medical costs, begin to take over their lives. This is actually, a very interesting topic, you know, because many people get crushed by medical bills long before they recover from their health issues. And, you know, it happens all the time. And even when they have healthcare coverage, et cetera, they're still overwhelmed with debt from any sort of big medical issue that happens. And it becomes actually part of the painful process of their recovery. And so why do medical costs leave so many people with financial difficulties?
Well, first, I want to thank you for having me on your show. But I find that people are penny wise and pound foolish when it comes to healthcare coverage. And, you know, we're right in open enrollment currently, and people want to, you know, save a few dollars on a premium by getting a high deductible policy where they've got to put out $5,000-$10,000 before the insurance even kicks in, and they don't even consider that, but they save, you know, maybe $50 a month on the premium, and that's ridiculous. You know, they don't understand how it all works, and I think that's one reason. And if they were to get the proper protection, the proper level or understanding what it will cost out of pocket up front, they would be more, acceptable or receptive to getting the, you know, better policy. And that's what I find with a lot of my clients. You know, they say, oh, I can't afford that. It's like, but can you afford to put out $5,000 before anything is paid by the insurance company? And they're like, well, no. I said, well, that's what'll happen if you get that deductible level. So they don't really understand how, you know, how that works. They're just looking at a dollar amount that comes out of their paycheck or that they have to pay on a monthly basis versus the big picture of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think insurance policies in general are very confusing, right? I mean, I think it's, you know, there's so many nuances to it. It's, you know, deductible, out-of-pocket, co-insurance. You know, I mean, they make it so convoluted. I mean, I could tell you as a private practice owner, you know, I have to provide healthcare insurance for my employees. And, you know, when we're looking at policies every year about what we're going to do or what direction we're going to head, I honestly look at my nurse and my manager and I just tell her, explain to me what's the best possible scenario here, because I personally don't understand it till today about how it works. So I can understand, you know, the confusion people may have when it comes to picking a policy, because, you know, you say, well, yeah, it's a $10,000 deductible, but if you're healthy and you don't really think you need insurance and you're not going to go to the doctor that often, in your mind, well, I'd rather pay the cheaper premium because I'm rarely going to use this $10,000 deductible, right? But it goes to the notion of why we buy insurance in the first place is because you're buying it for the unexpected, right? I mean, it's the same way you cover your house, your car, everything else. You know, you want a good policy because, you know, your health is no different. So, you know, what are the strategies people can use to manage medical debt without losing hope?
Well, the strategy is to be informed. You know, I educate my clients about how things work, you know, what's in their best interest. You know, I'm not just trying to get them enrolled. I want to get them enrolled in what's best for them. And I hear a lot of people say, well, I'm healthy or I don't go to the doctor. And I tell them, just because you don't go to the doctor doesn't mean nothing's wrong with you. It just means you just are burying your head in the sand, because you need to go just to get a physical to get a clean bill of health. You know, if nothing's wrong, that's fine. But, you know, there are a lot of folks that, you know, just don't want to put the money in. They don't see the importance of it. You know, they'll pay their car insurance or house insurance or go out to eat and spend as much money as they spend on a monthly premium. But they don't want to protect themselves. And, you know, that's unfortunate. But, you know, they just have to understand, for one, how everything works, how it'll benefit them in, you know, in the long run. And, you know, I have people say, I don't need insurance because I'm not, you know, I'm not going to go to the doctor. Not that they're not healthy, but I'm not going to go to the doctor. I don't need insurance. So it just depends on who you're dealing with. I just try to, you know, let them know the, you know, how the importance of it is, and how if you don't have it, you know, what you'll be dealing with. And that's, I think that's what's happening with a lot of folks. You know, they don't understand what they'll deal with until they have to deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes sense. And, you know, I guess if you put it in perspective, you have to have a home insurance to get a mortgage, right? You can't get it without it. You got to have a car insurance, otherwise it's illegal to drive without it, and that's a problem. But it's technically not illegal to not have health insurance. And the system does allow people to get care to a certain extent, but it doesn't do the flip side of it, of how it protects them from all these bills that come after that care is provided, right? And
That's for
so,
sure.
you know, and so someone, you know, gets sick, they have a balance, you know, how do they manage to pay for that, protecting their future, you know, stability?
Well, there are programs and funds available to help people not have to pay for it. You know, the facility that you go to, like hospitals, they've got funds for that. You know, it depends on your circumstances or what the requirements are to tap into those funds. You know, you can make a payment plan, because I think now there's no, I don't think you can put medical debt on the credit report. So it won't really affect you in that respect. But, you know, to take the pressure off, just, you know, make payment arrangements. Even if it's $5 a month, whatever you think you can comfortably afford to pay, show some kind of effort that you're trying to do something. But first ask, are there funds? How can I get this offset? You know, how can you write this off and I don't have to pay? You know, that's the first question you want to ask. And if they say, well, we can't write it off or whatever, then you say, well, are there funds available that can help pay some of it? And if they say, no, I can't, I say, well, okay, I can only pay $5 a month. Can I get on a payment plan? You know, just to show good faith. So I think you just, you know, have to not ignore it. And when you talk to people, and you know, there are people who are willing to help you, especially those in the, in those departments. You know, they know what's available, and they can, you know, direct you. If their facility doesn't have those kind of funds, they can direct you to, you know, a program or something that might have it. You know, especially if you know, have cancer or something like that.
Yeah. So maybe we can go off topic for a second. I'd like to get your opinion about all this because I think this is a very interesting topic, right? And it affects everybody in this country. And even under the, I mean, not to go into politics, but under the current political situation, we just have a government shutdown related to supposedly healthcare benefits and, you know, Obama tax cares and all that kind of stuff. And so, in your opinion, you know, maybe, I mean, in my opinion, for example, I think insurance companies are the biggest problem in all of this, right? I mean, it's a big problem. And, you know, I look at it just from a consumer perspective. I say, okay, well, I pay a premium. Then not only that, but I got to pay this, 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 and this. And I'm only covered for this amount. So what exactly am I paying for, you know? And, you know, in your opinion, how do you think the system can overall change, for example, to better suit, you know, both sides? Obviously, medicine is a business, and that's never going to change because we live in a capitalistic country. And so insurance companies are a business. But in your mind, how do you think there could be a happy medium between patients, insurance companies, and coverage? And what would your idea of that be?
Well, the system has improved. Obamacare is offering a lot of benefits that people don't really recognize. But as an agent, I see how, you know, at one time you did, it was mandated that you have health insurance. And, you know, if you didn't, you would get penalized, but that's been removed. The insurance companies, they are, I guess, limited to what they can use as far the funds. They have to use 80% of your premium to pay for services that you receive, and only 20% for administrative costs. If they, you know, don't meet that, then they have to send you a rebate. And, you know, I've gotten some rebates from insurance companies because, you know, they didn't do what they were supposed to. The ratio wasn't there. So their mechanisms in place, people just aren't really aware of them, but they need to tweak it. You know, every year they need to tweak it. And this political system right now is getting on my nerve because, you know, the people that are holding things up, they're getting their health insurance, they're getting paid, and they're not even going to work. You know, they are now, but during the shutdown, they were getting paid. You know, they had their health insurance, none of their stuff was at risk, but yet they're going to take that time and sit back instead of collaborating. Even if the government was shut down, they still could have come up with some strategies to help improve what's going on now. Now, the subsidies help people offset the premiums because the premiums are what they are. You know, they're expensive, but because of the subsidies, people don't have to pay as much money, but people have gotten spoiled. I know a lot of my clients were paying, you know, some zero premium or under $50, and now they're getting letters saying their premium is going to be $100, $200 a month. But still, that's reasonable for health care coverage. You know, if you look at, you know, if an employer plan, you're going to pay that much or more and not get as good of benefits. So people have to, you know, kind of realize that it's going to cost. You know, you're not going to get it for free. Those days are over. And, you know, pay for it, you know, spend that money to, you know, cover yourself, because if you don't spend it, you'll be in debt paying. If you go, I had one client called me that, you know, had canceled her insurance, and then she calls me, "Well, I want to re-enroll this year because I just took my daughter to urgent care and it cost me $235, where her premium would have been like $100 a month." So, you know, you have to, like I said, not be penny wise and pound foolish. So, you know,
Right.
but they do have to improve it. You know, there are, you know, there's room for improvement, and they need to look at it every year or every couple years and see where the trends are going and make the right adjustments, you know, instead of just sitting on it and, you know, thinking it's going to be okay.
That's true. All right, so we're gonna take a quick break. In the next segment, we're gonna explore the connection between stress, health, and financial planning, and why money management is one of the most important overlooked forms of self-care. So stay with us, everybody. We'll be back with Dr. Wendy in a second, to discuss all this. Stick with us. We'll be right back with more real stories, real breakthroughs, and real lives transformed. And we're back. I'm Dr. Yasser Sombol. Let's dive right back into today's medical conversation. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Real Medicine, Real Lives. Want more insight from this show and all your Now Media TV favorites? You can watch live or on demand anytime. Just download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS for nonstop bilingual programming. And if you prefer podcasts, you can listen anytime at www.nowmedia.tv. From business to lifestyle to culture, Now Media TV is with you wherever you go. Welcome back to Real Medicine, Real Lives. We're here with Dr. Wendy Labat, the financial healer. Shifting now into a topic many people overlook, how financial clarity directly impacts wellness and emotional stability. Money stress doesn't just affect the wallet, it affects the nervous system, relationships, and overall well-being. Millions live in constant state of financial anxiety, treating money like a crisis instead of a wellness practice. In this segment, we're going to try to help viewers understand that financial planning is a self-care. Dr. Labat, welcome back and thanks for coming.
Thank you.
All right, so let's start off by saying, how does creating a financial plan actually lower stress levels for people?
Well, I think creating a financial plan will lower the stress level because you know what you're dealing with. You know, you have, for one, you have to look at your situation. You know, a lot of people want to bury their head in the sand and, you know, just let it happen willy-nilly. But if you sit and look at what I call diagnosing your financial health, you look at your expenses, your income, your debt, but you have to distinguish between debt and expenses because they're two different categories. Debt, you know, is something that lingers until you pay it off and then it goes away. But expenses come every month, you pay it off, your light bill, next month you got another one. So you have to look at those, you know, kind of separately. And then you have to look at your spending. You know, people have to realize the money that they spend, is, money that can pay for the things they think they can't afford. And you have to distinguish between your wants and needs. And when you do those things, you have a better understanding of what your financial picture is, which gives you more of a sense of, relief and some knowledge about where you are, instead of just guessing in your head, well, I make this, my paycheck is this, and I pay, this mortgage and this car note and, this electricity bill, but they don't talk about how much they spend, which is, like I said, really kills a lot of folks. And once you look at that, you have more, less stress because you know what you're dealing with and you can establish a plan that will help you, kind of work things out on, and take the pressure off.
That's very true, and I think even under these current times where there's so much inflation and cost of living has gone up, it's become a lot harder even just to for people to meet their daily, requirements from month to month. And so taking control of money, why is that one of the best forms of self-care for yourself?
Well, because there are ways to still do what you need to do, but you think outside of the box, because they're used to, taking their paycheck to pay for everything. But there are ways to, get groceries at a lower rate and, use your credit cards to, get that extra rewards bonus that you can use to pay for something that you don't have to use your cash for. There are a lot of strategies you can implement even in these inflationary times, but it helps you think outside the box, because people have been, they get so used to one way that when circumstances change and that way doesn't fit anymore, they don't try to come up with an alternative way. And I think that's one of the issues that causes stress. But when you, start looking at alternative ways to, buy groceries, pay your utility bills, and, offset some debt, it takes a lot of the pressure off.
I feel like every time I try to do that, I feel like there's always something unexpected that shows up that just complicates
There
matters
he
lately.
is. There he
It
is.
seems
There's
to be
always going
more
to be
and more
something
lately,
unexpected.
something around the house needs to be fixed or, et cetera. So it does become harder. But so what's a first realistic step that somebody could take who kind of feels overwhelmed even just looking at their bills for the month?
Well, I think the main thing is I call it mindset transformation. You have to change your way of thinking about things. I tell my clients, get rid of the word can't. You don't want to say, if you want to buy something or do something, don't say, I can't do it or I can't afford it, because then you're shutting the door to any opportunity or any possibility. So always, say, well, how can I? If I want to do something or buy something, say, how can I do this? And that gives you, I guess a different perspective where you start looking outside the box for ways to do that or buy that. And I think that's the key thing, because when people say I can't, they shut down, they don't even look at alternatives. So I think the mindset transformation is the first thing. And once you start saying, how can I, then you look at what you're dealing with and look at the various scenarios and seek help. There's people that out there that can help you, and you don't always have to pay for that help, So a lot of people are embarrassed about talking about their finances, but everybody's had some issues. Like I tell my clients, you see me now, but you didn't see me back over the years that I've, bumped my head and, fell down and did all the things that you're going through. I've been there, done that. So, I'm not judging you. I'm just trying to get the real picture so I can advise you properly to get to where you want to be. But I think a lot of times just people are embarrassed and don't want to talk about it to other folks, and then they don't want to face the facts.
No, it's tough, and during these times especially, things are getting really, really tough for people, and it's becoming really hard for people to live day to day. And I mean, you hear all the stuff about credit card delinquencies being at an all-time high, auto delinquencies at an all-time high. I mean, it's but unfortunately, life has to go on, and people need to continue to consume, and it's just gotten crazy, and so. How do you think your suggestion for how couples or families can work together, and obviously financial stress is a big burden on any family, right? And there's been data out there where that it could be the number one strain on a, for example, a marriage or a relationship. And how do you get them to kind of work together and not fight over this? to make things better for themselves.
Well, first they have to realize they're on the same team. They're not, opponents in the situation. They have to work together, and they have to realize the strengths and weaknesses. One person may be a spender and another one may be a saver. So you got to get I guess, the more responsible person to handle it. But you have to make joint decisions, and you can't, don't fight over money, because money is, that's, like I said, the root of all evil, the love of money. So, there are ways to do things, and you don't want the stress in your marriage to compound the financial stresses you're dealing with. So you got to realize, you're a team on this, and, like I said, take a realistic look at where things are, and don't keep secrets. I know some, couples that, they don't want their husband to know this, and they don't want the wife to know that. It's like, you got to be transparent. I'm not saying that all the money has to be in one account. I believe in the wife having her little, money, and him having his, to do what they like to do personally. But they have to come together with joint and a joint account to pay the bills and that kind of thing. So, don't be secretive. Be upfront with your spouse or mate. And, if times get tough, say so when you see they're getting tough. Don't hide in them when, somebody's coming to foreclose on your house or, repossess your car. That's when the other one finds out. You have to be, on the same page about things. And when you do that, you can, tough it out together. And it's not as bad as, it could be if you were, kind of being like opponents, battling it out and causing stress from finances to interfere with the marriage.
Yeah. I mean, what would be your recommendation? I think I run into this just personally sometimes where my kids want something or, my wife wants something and I'm thinking to myself, this is really not the good time for this, but I don't want to let them down because, I never want them to feel like they can't have what they don't want. And so what would you recommend? And I'm sure I'm not the only person that does that or feels that way, but what would you recommend to somebody, on how they can kind of relay that message without feeling like they're shortcoming them,
Yeah.
or disappointing
Well,
them?
I recommend, for one, tell them, this isn't the best time, but can you contribute to this project or whatever it is you want, especially with your kids. I taught my kids early that, if you want, you spoil them early, but then you got to, get tough with them. And, when they're spending your money, they want everything. But when you start making them spend their money, they're more selective about what they want. So I would just suggest that you say, look, babe, I know you want this, but right now is not a good time. But, is there anything you can contribute to us getting it, or because where it all won't fall on me? And then if she said, well, no, and then say, well, do you think you can get, work on making this your little project to, for us to have this? And the same with the kids. If they want something, say, look, what do you have? Or do you have, depending on what their age is, if they can get a job, let them get a job. If they can't get a job, let them do some chores and earn it. You got to make them feel like they're making a contribution to it, and they're not just getting everything handed to them on a silver platter. And you'll be surprised at the attitude change once they realize that it does cost, because when you're taking the burden, they think it's free. Especially kids, they figure, okay, my mom and dad can get this. I don't have to pay for it. It doesn't cost anything. So you have to give them that perspective, and then let them know, times are hard, and I want to get this for you, but this isn't a good time, and let's work toward getting it. Maybe you set a date that where you can get it, but explain it to them. Don't just take the pressure and try to satisfy them, because life is not always satisfactory,
That's true. That's
So
true.
that's what I suggest.
And I agree with that because, I recently bought my own space for my practice and I actually made my kids, they're 14 and 11, and so I told them if they wanted a job that they need to come help me clean the office once a week. And so I actually go with my kids once a week in order for them to learn responsibility, and so I pay them to do that to have their own spending money. And so I have to feed them and clothe them, yes, but anything outside of that, they have to save their own money to get it. My son wanted an e-bike. I said, well, that's an expensive thing. So here's what you're going to have to do. You owe me at least 40% of the cost of the e-bike, and I'll split it with you or something like that. But he had to work to get that. And I think that's really important because it teaches discipline as they get older. I agree with you on that.
Yeah, and I bet you he loves that e-bike and he's taking care of it because he had to put his money out on it, you
That's
know.
true.
That's great. And that's what you have to do, especially at that age. If they don't learn it now, when you know, they'll be in your pocket forever. So you definitely want to get them
That's
out.
true. All right, Dr. Labat, for those who want to learn more about where they can connect with you, your books, your system, your online resources, where would they go?
Well, they can go to my website, which is the financial cures with an S.com, or they can check me out on social media, Facebook, Dr. Wendy Labat, LinkedIn, Dr. Wendy Labat, Instagram, dr.wendy.labat, and my email address, Dr. Wendy Labat at drwendylabat.com. So feel free to reach out to me. I'll be glad to talk with folks.
Great. All right, guys, coming up next, the system Dr. Labat created to help people turn financial fear into financial freedom. So you're not going to want to miss this segment. So we're going to take a quick break and come back and hear all about it.
Stick with us. We'll be right back with more real stories, real breakthroughs, and real lives transformed. And we're back. I'm Dr. Yasir Sombol. Let's dive right back into today's medical conversation.
Welcome back to Real Medicine, Real Lives. In this segment, we're diving into the transformational framework Dr. Labat created, the financial cure system. So many people live with quiet financial fear, and this segment aims to break that cycle. Financial fear often keeps people frozen. The financial cure system helps people diagnose what's wrong, treat the issues, and heal their financial life using a step-by-step approach. Dr. Labat, welcome back.
Thank you.
And I think this is a very, very fun topic, actually, because I think a lot of people can benefit from this. So, what inspired you to create this financial cure system, and how does it help people heal financially?
Well, I guess it was spirit led. You know, I just saw that the need, and then, you know, all these ideas started coming to me. But and then to relate it to health versus just, you know, because I don't use the word budgeting because, you know, people get turned off, but I relate it to folks, you know, with health. You know, I talk about anorexic income, obese debt, and people can relate to that, you know. So, and it gives them more of a sense of, okay, I can, let me deal with that. I can handle that. But I, my financial cure system is based on what I call the 6 ways to stop hemorrhaging money. And they're, you know, the mindset transformation, taking control over your finances, proper protection to prevent financial ruin, tax strategies, understanding the impact of the global economy, and taking action. But each, you know, each of those categories have, you know, sub steps, but that's the overall picture. And if you do the things that you need to do and take those steps, you won't hemorrhage money. You know, you'll be more informed about how to handle your money. And that's what people are missing. They don't really know what to do. So I want folks to, you know, understand the benefit of knowing what to do versus just, you know, burying their head in the sands.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think the most difficult part of this, I tell my kids this all the time, your most powerful muscle in your body is your brain, right? Because your brain tells you everything. If your brain is sad, your body's sad. If your brain is happy, your body's happy. And so I think the next thing is, how do you get convince people that mindset is really the key to this financial transformation that they're going to make?
Well, I think if you know, tell them for one and show them what they say impacts what happens to you. I have one client calling me and, you know, she's a senior citizen and she was talking about, I'm on a fixed income, I can only do that. I said, well, look, you speak in that and that's what's going to happen. But look, she's an actress. So, you know, she has opportunity to make money. And I said, you're, you know, you're limiting yourself because your mindset is saying you're a senior citizen, poor me, I can't do this, can't do that. But yet, what would you say is, I'm a senior citizen, but how can I make more money? How can I afford this? You know, stop talking in the negative because if you speak negative things will happen. And I think if people, you know, just absorb that perspective, they'll realize that, hey, I am speaking negative, you know. And when I pointed it out to her, she was like, I'm so glad I had this conversation with you because I didn't realize that I was talking so negatively. So, you know, if you just not necessarily, you want to point it out, make them aware, but you don't want to beat them up about it, but just show them the benefit of speaking positively and thinking positively and how that will change the outcome of things that are happening to them.
Yeah. And so what are some of the biggest myths people believe about money that keeps them stuck?
Well, they think that, oh, I need more money to improve my situation. I think that's the biggest one. You know, you don't necessarily need more money. You just have to manage what you have, and you can, you know, work with what you have because that's what you do have. And once you learn how to work with what you have, you know, as you get more money, then you'll be able to, you know, manage better. Because, you know, you look at people that, you know, have won the lottery or, you know, athletes who, you know, go from, you know, not having money to making millions of dollars. They don't know what to do with the money. So in a short period of time, that money is gone or they've squandered it or don't even know where everything, you know, the money went. So you really have to, you know, just know what you're doing, you know, change your mindset, get informed, learn about it. And, you know, even if you hire somebody to manage your money, you still have to know what they need to know and have checks and balances in place so they don't squander your money for you.
Yeah. I actually watched a documentary once on Netflix about all these professional athletes that were, you know, millionaires and they're all broke, you know. And yeah. I think that that's a really important thing because it's not about how much money you have. It's about how you use that money to create more money, right? I mean, or create wealth for yourself.
Money, work for you.
Right, exactly. And I think that's the missing part, you know. I mean, there's so many people that, you know, they talk about, well, why do you invest in the stock market, for example? Well, that's a way to create more money instead of putting it in a bank that's not going to do anything for you. And, you know, savings, right? If you put money away every week and you say, then it's money you know you're not going to spend unless you really need it. So it's a different story, but I agree. And so how can someone begin applying to diagnose, treat, and heal the approach to their own finances?
Well, first they need to, you know, write it down. Write down, what, like I said, what your expenses are, what your debt is, what your income, and not just your paycheck, but any kind of money you get in. Whether it's on a regular basis or sporadically, you know, it's still income. And look at that and see what the damage is, what I say, what is the damage, you know, what is it going to cost me or what do I have to pay every month? What are your, you know, mandatory expenses and, you know, cash outlay every month? And then what is your income? Do you have enough to cover it? And if you don't, then you have to start thinking of ways to kind of work that out. And, you know, you can call creditors and get payments lowered. You can call utility companies and work out, you know, different payment plans. There are a lot of ways, you know, you just ask. You know, people are afraid to ask for the things they need. They're afraid to ask someone to help them figure it out. So don't be afraid. Don't be ashamed because, you know, and don't worry about somebody prejudging you because they're not paying your bills. You know, unless they're giving you money every month, you don't worry about what they say. And even if they are giving you money every month, you don't worry about what they're saying because you have to deal with your own situation. So that's the key, is to see where you are. Like I say, diagnose your financial health. That means, like, when your patients come to you, you run tests, you get information because you got to come up with a diagnosis. Once you diagnose it, then you come up with a treatment plan. And this, you know, same with your finances. Once you see where you are, then you're going to wonder, how am I going to treat this financial health? And then once you come up with the prescriptions to, you know, improve it, then, you know, you come out with a better situation. So it's the same thing with your money. You know, you have to diagnose, treat, and then not just treat it, but continue on that path because you don't want to treat it and get everything fine. Then you're back in the same thing because you go back to the old habits. So that's the key.
So if you can briefly, I think people would love to hear this, just give us a story, a success story of yours that you can tell us about.
Okay, well, I'm going to use my own story, especially when it comes to the health insurance situation. I ended up expanding my business in 2014 when, the government mandated that everybody have health insurance. So I included insurance and financial services. And I bought all the products and services I was selling to my clients, because I'm a person of integrity. And because people were saying, what do you have? Where's your money? So, I had, good health insurance. I, bought all these supplemental policies that I thought I'd never use. It was just part of my marketing strategy. But in 2017, I was diagnosed with a very aggressive form of breast cancer. So I chose a very aggressive form of treatment because I'm kicking breast cancer's butt, my medical bills totaled to almost $1.5 million. And fortunately for me, my health insurance covered all of it because I had the proper protection for that. But in addition to that, I had all these supplemental policies I never thought I would use. But because I had them and I was able to use them, I got multiple six-figure tax-free financial shots in the arm that allowed me to, focus on my recovery and not worry about money. So, can you imagine having $1.5 million worth of medical bills along with your business and personal expenses while you're battling breast cancer? That really could have devastated me. But thank God, like I said, I practiced what I preached and it ended up being a blessing. It ended up being profitable. I hate to say it, but breast cancer was profitable to me. And, I created the financial cure system to help others, not let an illness or injury ruin them financially.
That's a great story. Thank you so much for sharing that. I know it's probably personal, but I appreciate it. So up next, we're going to talk about why when people ignore their financial difficulties, why this becomes a real health issue. So stay with us. We're going to be back with Dr. Labat to talk about this.
Stick with us. We'll be right back with more real stories, real breakthroughs, and real lives transformed. And we're back. I'm Dr. Yasser Sombol. Let's dive right back into today's medical conversation.
Welcome back to Real Medicine, Real Lives. Don't miss a second of this show or any of your Now Media TV favorites, streaming live and on demand whenever you choose. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and explore bilingual programs around the clock on www.nowmedia.tv. Whether it's business, health, lifestyle, or culture, Now Media TV is here for you 24/7. Welcome back, everybody. In this final segment, we're addressing a powerful truth. Ignoring financial problems doesn't make them disappear. It makes them heavier, scarier, and in many cases, physically stressful. Dr. Labat will help us understand how to break that cycle with honesty and empowerment. Dr. Labat, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, so let's get started on this because this is, obviously a very important topic as well. And how lack of money can lead to several things: anxiety, not being able to sleep, stress, emotional strain. And so why do people ignore their problems even though when they know it's hurting them, especially in financial situations?
Well, I think they ignore it because they think it's too big for them to handle. They don't want to face it, and I don't really think they think that it'll go away, but they know they ignore them. They think it'll take the pressure off of them, but the opposite is true. When you ignore something, just like in the medical field, if you ignore high blood pressure and heart disease, you'll have a stroke or heart attack. It doesn't make it get any better. So you have to, be proactive, and nip it in the bud, and you'll be surprised that it's not as bad as it seems. When you take a look, a realistic look at things, it may be devastating at first, but when I tell people you have to eat this elephant one bite at a time. It may seem astronomical now, but if you take steps and take a little bit of progress every day or every month or however the strategy is, you'll be surprised that, you'll look back and say, wow, I'm kind of glad I went through that because now I know this and, you're in a better position to move forward. So people, they just have to wake up and realize, it's not going away. Just because you ignore it doesn't mean it's going away. Matter of fact, it means it's getting worse.
That's true. And so, how does avoidance increase these physical manifestations like anxiety, sleeplessness, physical tension, even non-specific pains, muscle, body aches, and things like that.
Well, because, you know, you may think you're ignoring it, but your subconscious is, you know, constantly thinking about it. You know, it's weighing on your mind, which, you know, weighs on your body, on your physical body. You know, you start stressing, you start, like I said, blood pressure gets high, you know, hair starts coming out, or, you know, you start drinking or doing things you don't have any business doing. And it's, you know, it leads to a whole another level of physical deterioration.
And so when people start to ignore those, or, you know, what's the first step that they can do to face this fear without panicking?
Well, like, talk to someone they can trust, that, you know, they can talk about finances with. You know, you want to go to somebody that you feel you trust, their, you know, that they have your best interests in mind, and that they kind of know what, you know, what you're dealing with. And you'll be surprised at how many people are dealing with the same thing you're dealing with, or have dealt with the same thing you're dealing with. And, you know, if you see someone or trust someone, talk to them about it. You know, don't just keep it bottled in, because when you let it out, that relieves some of the stress. You know, you get it off your chest. And then, especially if you let it out with someone that can kind of give you a strategy to help you get, you know, move forward and help eliminate, or, you know, take bites out of that elephant. You know, that's the key thing, is just talk to somebody, you know, pray about it. If you're a praying person, pray about it. That's the first thing you need to do, is pray about it. But, you know, talk to someone that you trust. You know, you don't want to just tell everybody your business.
Right. I think financial burdens are kind of like your grades at school. I remember this from medical school. You know, they used to tell us, everybody look to your left and look to your right. This was on the first day. And they said, one out of every three of you won't be here at the end of this 4 years. And then they would say, all of you are probably going to do, the majority of you are barely going to pass medical school. And that's just kind of how it works. But you were always embarrassed, even though you knew the majority of people only passed, you were always embarrassed to tell people what your grade was. You know, I mean, I barely passed medical school, I know that. But it doesn't mean it made me a bad doctor. It's just kind of the way it was designed, right? And so I think financial things are the same thing. You think, I'm the only one going through this, and I don't know how to talk about it because it makes me look like a bad person. But the reality is there's probably so many people that are struggling with you at the same time. And with everything else, you know, in life, you know, sometimes you just need that support to be able to encourage you to get through those next steps.
Yeah, so, that's true. That's true. You know, I wanted to go to medical school, but I didn't get accepted. So I was like, no, Lord, that was the only thing I wanted. But then God made me a doctor, not a medical doctor, but I'm still doing some healing. So that's the key thing.
Well,
but yeah, you know, people really do need to realize, you know, don't worry about what other people think, because, you know, people are going to judge you whether you do good or bad. So that's what my mom used to say, just give them something to talk about.
Right. That's true. And so, how can someone turn avoidance into action and relief?
Well, first they have to, you know, change their thinking. You know, it's not about, don't be afraid. You know, like I said, fear is false evidence appearing real. You know that there is a solution and seek the solution. You know, that's the key. Seek the solution. Don't hide from it, you know, because the longer you hide, the worse it's going to get. So, you know, you have to really, you know, just face up to it, man up or woman up, and say, look, I'm going to deal with this, and talk to somebody that can be encouraging to you to help you deal with it. So, you know, that's the key. It's up to you to take that step. You know, you can't make someone, you know, face it, but it's up to them to decide. You have to decide. That's the key word, decide to take advantage of opportunities to, you know, get out of that situation. Decide to do better. Decide to face it. You have to decide.
And are there things you recommend to people besides, let's say, you know, financial planning and so forth, when they're dealing with this kind of stuff? You know, what are some of the things that can help them, maybe, for example, think clearer, step back, or take some of the pressure off, whether it's exercise or prayer? Or, I mean, are there things that you recommend along with this planning that gets people through some of this stuff?
Well, my first thing is prayer. You know, I'm a spiritual person, and I always, you know, pray about everything. I let the Spirit lead me on what to do. But if you're not a spiritual person, I'm sure you've got some higher power that you look to for, big decision making. And then, one thing I found helpful, and I'm old school, but Chat GPT and all these AI solutions, Google or Chat GPT your scenario and let them come up with an answer or a possible solution. And I found that that's been pretty effective. At least it lets you, it kind of simplifies things, it kind of eases your mind that there are solutions and, take advantage of that. Prayer would be my first thing because, God's gonna always work it out, whether it looks like it or not, he's gonna work it out. But, just be more informed, educate yourself about your situation so you can know what to do, or when you talk to folks that are gonna help you do what you think you need to do, at least you'll know what they're supposed to know. So that, educate yourself.
Yeah, that's true. And how do you help people move from guilt and shame in this situation to more empowerment and confidence?
Well, for one, you can't be guilty about what's happened because it's done and ain't nothing you can do about it. So what you have to do is move forward, which means you have to be empowered to move forward, and don't be shameful because, who's in a glass house that can't throw a stone? Everybody's been lived in that glass house before. So don't let what other people say or think, influence you to where you're feeling guilty or ashamed. Just get rid of the guilt because it's already done. Get rid of the shame because there's nothing you can do about it, and move forward and empower yourself with the knowledge and confidence of knowing that there are ways you can get out of it.
And is part of your approach where you tell people you kind of fragment it down, meaning, okay, this is a big load, and so we're going to break this into pieces and we're going to tackle one piece at a time, because I think it makes it simpler to see the end result rather than taking it all on at once. Is that kind of the way you approach things with this?
Yeah, like I said, you got to eat the elephant one bite at a time, and you just have to look and see what bites you have to take in what order. Because it is financial debt or financial situations are elephants, so you have to break it down, and you can eat the elephant, but you have to do it one bite at a time. So it's all, I customize it to the needs of my client. There's no one size fits all for everybody's scenario, but you look at their situation and you base it on what's best for them.
Yeah. And in your experience, what would you say the timeline is for most people on average? I mean, obviously everybody's different, but on average, what's the timeline it takes for people to get through this whole process?
Well, it depends on where they are, how much debt you have, how much income you have, what your, how many dogs are on you, like I said, you have creditors calling you all the time where you hate to answer the phone, or are you just, seeing that, debt's piling and it's hard for you to make those minimum payments? You want to always pay your debt off every month, but if you can't, the minimum payment, or if you can't meet the minimum payment, you have to position yourself where you can at least make minimum payments on things. You don't want your utilities cut off. You don't want people repossessing your car. You have to look and see what's the most pressing issue, and you deal with that. And then, you give yourself, I guess, a time frame, but I don't focus on the time frame because you never know. Some things, you may get a blessing where you can wipe some things off, or somebody may take a load off, and you just have to. I don't, I mean, I do a time frame in a sense, but that's not the main area I focus on. I don't try to put, time limits, but I do give people say, okay, every week you need to do that, or every month you need to. There are some guidelines, but as far as, the ultimate thing, I don't like to do that just because you never know what comes up. Things happen, and it could put a mess up your time frame. So I don't like to focus on the timing as far as the ultimate, how we're going to eliminate, but they do have guidelines that they have to consistently do things, every month or every week, depending on their scenario.
Great. Well, Dr. Labat, this has been a very, very interesting show. I really appreciate your expertise, compassion with us today, your insights that reminds us that the financial health is an essential part of the overall wellness, and that taking small steps towards clarity can truly transform a family's future. To all the viewers, remember, facing your finances is an act of courage, and healing begins the moment you stop running from the fear and start rewriting your story. Thank you for joining us today on Real Medicine, Real Lives. I'm Dr. Yasser Sombol. Stay well, stay empowered, and we'll see you next time.